Here we are, Paul Correa Studios, another episode of Spinning It. And look, my voice is a little, it's just a little shot right now. And the thing of the matter is, I've been going hard at these home games, you know, going nuts. I'm the hype guy. And, you know, if I had any other guests, I might have been, you know, a little hesitant to record the show, but I knew I had a true pro in the building, someone that gets it. And, you know, it's just someone that I knew for sure would just still come in and even handle my little raspy voice and understand from their standpoint. But I'm sure that they've recorded episodes or shows themselves, maybe with their voice not completely 1,000%. And I'm talking about the man himself. I'm talking about the man who just celebrated over 1,000 regular season games with your Anaheim Ducks. Our PA announcer, Mr. Phil Hewlett, is in the studio.
JoJo, I'm sorry. I ate a slice of pizza, ran out of the microwave, and burned my vocal cords out.
No. Oh, man.
I'm kidding you.
You know what? I was little nervous, but I was like, you know what? No, Phil's going to get it. He's going to get it because, you know, the show doesn't stop. Right,
no,
Phil?
It doesn't. And, you know, we're here to talk about stories, right?
Of course.
I have a story about that. All right. I work on the radio.
Yep.
And I'm the voice of the Ducks.
Yes.
I don't miss Ducks games. It's a little like hockey players, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, they get a puck to the teeth and like 10 minutes later, they're back on the ice. Right? It's like a basketball player gets a hangnail. He's on the injured reserve for 2 weeks, you know, but for me, I don't miss games. I missed two games. One was during the .com boom and iHeart bought our company.
Yep.
And sent me out to Texas to see their way of doing things. Right. So I missed one game. This was back in the 90s. And then I missed another game because my daughter, Olivia, accidentally picked the wrong Saturday for her wedding. She was supposed to pick the following week, but
how dare she?
Yeah, and she booked everything and all that. And so I've missed two games. I've been sick at games. I've had laryngitis at games. I had my tonsils and adenoids and all kinds of stuff done inside my throat and my face and my head to make this instrument work.
Yes.
On a regular basis. I don't get as raspy as often as I used to. But the nights I do. And taking this back to iHeart, I work for iHeart now on the radio, doing the news. And there was a day where I was not ready for primetime radio on a microphone. I sounded terrible and could not read the news. But there was a hockey game that night. So I called out sick on the radio.
Okay.
Did the hockey game. And it was like, Anaheim Ducks.
But you know, here's the thing. As a true pro yourself, even not at your 100%, is probably sounds still pretty solid.
Well, I think the fans give me a pass,
sure,
because they expect me to be there, and I appreciate that. But then my radio boss called me in the morning, called me into the office on the phone because I work out of my house, on the phone, and he said, "Dude, I don't appreciate you calling out sick and then going to a Ducks game and working there."
Oh, dude. Yeah. What'd you say to that?
Well, I said, look, I understand how you feel.
I get it.
I understand why you would say that. I also understand that you don't want me to sound like crap when I'm on the radio.
Yeah.
But the fans expect me to be at the hockey game and I go no matter what.
No matter what.
If I'm
unless your daughter's getting married, which I guess is somewhat understandable.
Yeah. I guess. You know, the only I'd have to be bleeding out, you know, to not go to a hockey game.
No, I feel that. But look, for me, and you know, now that I'm talking a little bit more, I'm like, okay, I sound all right.
We're
warming up.
Get the juices flowing.
We're getting the juices flowing, and I'm just pumped to have you on the show, Phil. You know, and just coming after your celebration of your 1,000th game.
And I really appreciate it because it's a great time for this because I'm frankly still giddy.
Yeah.
I mean,
Let's talk about the night a little bit, huh?
Well, you know, I would have been happy with a cake.
Yeah, you know what? The planning leading up to it, and obviously we all had to kind of keep a secret and whatnot. And, you know, major props to the crew because Phil still had to come in and rehearse that day. Yeah. In fact, we had to tell him to not read the first 50 lines of the script.
Yeah.
And then we had to take them out of the bowl. I don't know where they took you because we had to then rehearse the ceremony. Uh-huh. But like, let's dip into the night a little
bit.
It
was a total head fake.
Crazy.
Yeah. So I had a minder for the night. You know, I'll just throw his name out. Rich Cooley. Hi, how are you, buddy? Nice.
Cooley.
Nice to talk to you again. Yeah, he took me and my wife and my youngest daughter, Victoria. So Remy is my wife, Victoria, my youngest daughter. And he took us around. They came with me, and so they were early. And then we were basically sequestered.
Yeah.
Yeah. He took us away from what was happening. After a certain point, I got to rehearse a couple things, but then that was it. All I got to do was see my temporary spot next to you, JoJo.
Absolutely.
In the DJ
booth. I got to say, having Phil Hewlett on stage with me was an absolute treat. It was awesome, man. How was that? Just being down with the fans.
See, that's why I do this.
Yeah.
You know, it's like nothing else. Well, there are other things that matter, but the number one thing that matters is my connection with the fans.
Absolutely.
And feeding off of their energy. And since the league did the 2020 COVID edict and moved all the PA announcers away from the players and wherever the various arenas could find a spot for an announcer, because, you know, when this building was built, the announcer was supposed to be in the referee's crease on the ice, which is where I was from 1996 until 2020.
Yep.
And so once we moved, there's a disconnect. And so,
in fact, the thing that a lot of people don't know is that Phil, right now, you're in the spot that I used to be in.
Yeah.
Before I moved down to the stage.
So you could relate to that.
I remember I would play songs from up there and I would put my head out and just to kind of see if I could feel the vibe. But now it's obviously like I'm in it with the crowd. And and one thing I'll say too, when you were in the scorer's box and in between the penalty boxes, because of the glass, you were obviously in the action, but like still somewhat separated from the fans, even through just glass.
It's a bit of a cone of silence.
A little bit, And so so you being on the stage and just being in the mix, and I remember even just you doing your power play call, just seeing the fans being able to like see you do it right in front of them was really a treat to
that
see.
The power play was ridiculous. The one that we only had one, didn't we?
One that really comes to mind. I've been here almost 15 years, guys. Not nearly as long as my man Phil, but what I'll say is Phil was feeling it on the stage. I knew, I was like, oh man, he's having a night. And for his 1,000th game, every time he did kind of like an iconic, you know, part to his calls, whether that was a goal call, JMG power play call, we also put him on the screen, right? Yeah. And there was something iconic that I love that Phil does. I don't get how he truly does it sometimes is he stretches out that power play call.
Yeah.
And in this moment, the ref was going to drop the puck and he did it. And what did you say, Phil?
Well, here's how it works.
Okay, let's reenact. Let's reenact the moment.
And you tell me. I mean, I'm going to call you out because I think you and and Scott, our game day director, I think it's like a around the corner, soft kind of passive aggressive move to get me to not do it for like a whole minute long by doing that little quack thing.
Oh yeah, the quack thing is new. Yeah. So let's reenact the moment, right? So ref makes the call. I'm going the quack moment. That's my moment to get the crowd quacking to lead into Phil. So we're like quack, quack. Quack.
Now the linesman has the puck,
yes,
and he's calling the two guys in to do the face-off. And sometimes they go in, and he's happy, and he just drops the puck, and it's done. So it's your Anaheim Ducks are on a JMG power play, and that's all it is.
That's all it is, yeah.
But other times, he's standing around, he's scratching himself, he's looking at the other players, they're talking to their other players, and every now and then he'll kick the one guy out.
Yep.
Then they go over there and talk to each other,
which is then Phil's time to shine. Though,
who wants to jump into the circle now? I don't know. You want to do it? Yeah. Well, how about him? No, he's not feeling good. Okay, let's put him in there. And so anyway, I'm still saying because I do. And now your Ducks are on a JMG Oh, no, wait. Your Anaheim Ducks are on. So I'm holding out the on. Right?
Yes.
Until,
which is so epic.
Until the puck drops and I say, a JMG power play. And so in this case, he takes forever to get to the face-off dot. The players take forever to skate over. And then he's not happy with one of the players. He kicks him out.
And then you're still going. Mind you, he's still going. You're still going.
Skates up like he's, you know, he doesn't have to be anywhere anytime soon. And then the linesman stands up again and he looks back at the referee and like there's something else going on. And then I say, are you kidding me?
On mic that just went all across the Honda Center. It was epic. And what made it even better was that you were on camera. Which
I had no idea.
You had no idea, but like it was special for, you know, your.
Because I'm watching the linesman.
Yes.
I got to stay on cue here.
So you on camera, you're just like, are you kidding me? And I was like, oh, I was literally standing right next to you, cracking up. Producer Steph is upstairs, cracking up.
I immediately thought, you know, because I have nightmares about the league going after me. Well, I'll tell you why this is. Because when, and we may go into the whole story about how I got around to doing this stuff. This public address announcing.
Oh, yeah.
But when I was new, every announcer in the league basically announced local goals like this. Detroit Red Wings goal number 5. You know,
even like the home PAs?
The home PAs.
Oh,
that
wow.
was the traditional way of doing it in the NHL.
Wow.
And I was in the minor leagues working for the Long Beach Ice Dogs
nice.
In the International Hockey League, which was a step down from the NHL. Double A versus, triple A. And so I used to go ham over there. Right?
So in the other leagues, the PAs were going.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, you didn't know.
I
yeah.
I just know that's what I did.
Sure. Sure.
And so when then Disney got in contact with me and said, hey, how'd you like to be our announcer? And I said, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And can you bring.
Was that always the goal, by the way? Like to, you know,
I
make it to the NHL.
What's weird is I'm not a goals kind of guy.
Sure.
I just fall into things.
Mm.
People ask me and I say, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds good. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
And that's what happened pretty much with the Ducks. And I said, yeah, sure. But they said, okay, we want you to bring what you do here to the majors. Anyway, while I was in the minors, there were the head official for the whole league used to come to me while I was in the dining hall before the game started, and he used to chew me out and say, don't do that anymore. Don't taunt the other team.
Wow.
It's not what we do in hockey. And I said, well, you know, you're going to have to talk to my boss.
Yeah.
Because that's what he wants me to do. Anyway, I got to the NHL with the Mighty Ducks, and I started doing, you know, Mighty Ducks go and all that kind of stuff. And there was pushback.
Oh, I'm sure.
There were people looking at me like, what are you doing?
Wow.
There were even people in the organization who were feeling a little sketchy about it.
Yeah. And
when we get to the playoffs, there were two instances where I was told before the first playoff game, hey, don't do that Mighty Ducks goal thing that you normally do.
What?
Are you sure you don't want to bring what brung us? You know?
Yeah.
And so what happened in both cases was, I didn't announce the goals that way. And then the fans lit up the phones.
I'm sure. I love how that's what it is, right?
Yeah.
No forums, no Reddits yet.
Yeah.
No social media. They lit up the phones.
They actually had to dial on a rotary, you know? And then back in my day.
Oh, man.
And then the next game, they said, okay, Phil, go ahead and do that. You know, maybe dial it back a little bit, but go ahead. You know? And then by
crazy.
The third game, it was dialed all the way up.
This is what I love about the show. First of all, it's spinning because we spin in all these different directions, and I feel like this conversation has been spinning different directions. We went from like not talking about our 100% selves at times, but still pushing through to celebrating 1,000 games, to all the way now just talking about Phil's time with the Ice Dogs. Let's dip into that a little bit more in terms of just like Phil before the Ducks. I feel like Ducks fans, would love to just hear about that from the radio background. I know we already talked about kind of, Long Beach and whatnot, but you know, what made Phil?
I've always been comfortable in front of a crowd or with a crowd, regardless of how big it was.
Yeah.
I mean, going back in the radio days, I would, host or MC, radio nights at nightclubs you know, packed with, you know, headbanging Hessians, you know, the Red Onion, you know, in Huntington Harbor or in Lakewood and places like that with like 400 or 500 people. And, you know, the person with the microphone's in charge, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I had so much fun doing that and just being, you know, the ringmaster, the circus master.
Yeah.
And so when I got to the Ice Dogs, you know, being in front of a big crowd was no big deal.
Yeah, it was no big deal.
And the Ice Dogs put me out on the ice. You know, whenever the Zambonis came out and they play, you know, the good old hockey game.
The hockey song.
I would stand out there and I'd get everybody to sing along and I would sing it on the mic and then I would do my arm like this.
Wow.
And everybody would say, do the arm with Phil. And I would get, you know, people would yell it out. And if I couldn't get out there right away for whatever reason, people would yell, do the arm, you know. And
that's
to see
awesome.
People see me at the streets or at a store. Hey, Phil, you know, they'd do the
arm.
And that became a thing. And then I don't know for sure. It is speculation on my part, but maybe the Disney people saw that I was comfortable with that sort of thing. And they said, come on over. And so until teams, including ours, started having in-arena hosts like what you do and what Ali Kay does so well, I used to do everything on the ice.
Yeah.
And, you know, and it was sometimes I wasn't scheduled and they say, hey, Phil, like 2 seconds before something's going to happen.
Of course.
Can you go out there and do this Zor brace?
Of course.
What? Okay. Is there a prize? Nah, just whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
I just give the, and I don't know anybody's names. I just give them fake names and just, you know, just do the whole thing.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah. And it almost always went well. There was one time it didn't though. I gave away a car, you know, at the end of the season on fan appreciation night. And we had a very finite, you know how this works, a very finite amount of time to do this.
Oh, of course.
Got to get off the ice, you know, NHL rules and all that by a certain point. And you've got so much out there. You got all this game stuff. Anyway, we had one of these long shot kind of things where they had to get closest to the dot. And we had 5 contestants. And it was, you know, a kind of a no-brainer contest. There was nothing difficult about it. And we get to the number, how many people were there? There were 3 people. There were 2 ladies and 1 man.
Okay.
A lady goes.
They're playing for the car.
Yeah. And then, then the man goes. And they told me, okay, when we do this, we got to get out in 1:20.
Ooh.
Okay. 1:20. So it's the guy's turn. And he's supposed to I put the puck down and he's supposed to, you know, smack it.
Yeah.
He starts doing push-ups and calisthenics.
Hey, man, we got 1:20, man.
I'm saying,
we got to go.
I'm saying, dude, and you know, and they can't hear you the mic when they're down there because the mic is facing out to the crowd.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm saying, dude, you got to get up. You got to do the thing. And so anyway, I stuck the mic down beside me and I bent over to him and I tried to smile while I was doing it. I said, if you don't go now, you're not going to go.
Yeah.
And then he didn't get up. So I said, okay. And I skipped him and I went to the next lady. And then she nailed the dot.
Oh, so he didn't even get a try.
He didn't even get to go.
Hey.
And then he made a big deal out of it.
Oh, man.
But we had the video of him being a jerk.
Yeah, that's wild. You know, let me throw in my story. I remember this has to deal with 2 old partners, and this was at a watch party, right? And at the time, I remember you know for sure out of all this. Right now, it's 5 goals, and it's free Chick-fil-A, right? Back then, it was if we scored 5 goals, we would get free wings at Hooters.
Hooters, yeah.
Okay.
We're going to Hooters.
Yeah, we're going to Hooters. Yeah, and then so we were at an OG's doing a watch party, and we scored 5 goals, and I was just so excited. I was like, yeah, free wings. Ugh. And
they sell wings at OG's?
Well, I don't know if they did or not, but I remember the manager came running up to me. He's like, what are you doing? Like, people are asking for free wings. And that was probably one of my biggest flubs very early on. But I remember those watch parties, Phil. Those were kind of the first times when I was on the street team that I got to start hopping on a mic, you know, and it was really, you know, just, you know, sponsor events and again, those watch parties. And I remember we would score and I remember always saying like, don't do the goal call like Phil. That's Phil's thing. If Phil's not here, I'm obviously hosting. I'm not going to try and do your famous Anaheim Ducks goal call.
Okay, lay it out on the table here.
What?
Did you actually try once?
No, no. And I.
So you decided up front.
Up front.
Okay.
Very up front. Because one, I obviously just didn't want to seem like I was copying you. But I think.
He's lying.
But I think that's a testament to how signature your call is, right? And even at the 1,000th get, or at least, you know, at that point it was what, 1,002, our actual celebration?
Right. The 1,000th game was
Women in Sports Night.
Women in Sports Night, December 6th.
Yes.
Yeah.
So anyway, when we did that timeout where you were essentially describing your own moment, I cut in and I said,
yeah.
I remember like even... I remember, like, now years later, I think, but before I ended it, I was like, Mr. Anaheim Ducks goal himself. Like, that was the first time I really, like, just wanted to even try it. Now, years down the line. Mm-hmm. And so it's cool going, like, kind of hearing your story about, like, how that was, I didn't know that. I didn't know that it was that traditional back then. You kind of brought that in.
And now everybody does it.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Dang. What would you say? What would you say, I guess, around the league, like, do you feel like kind of emulates now something similar? You literally feel like everyone does?
Oh,
like,
yeah, I think they do. And I got to tell you, I mean, I'm not the font of joy and voice, you know, in this league. I mean, there's so many amazing announcers.
Yeah.
Many of whom have really great signature goal calls and other things. And they're so good. And we have a brotherhood. It's 32 of us.
Yeah, that's it.
I mean, there are 32 people in North America who get to do this. I mean, that's how lucky and blessed I am to be part of this brotherhood. And it is a brotherhood for now. I imagine there's going to be a sister in there sooner or later.
Yeah. It's crazy to say that because what a lot of people didn't get to see after the game was we had kind of a surprise for you in the control room where we had some of the other PAs from around the league and even other sports, you know, congratulate you on your 1,000th game. How was that for you?
I started to get a little bit of a tear in my eye.
Dang, I would have never thought to see Phil, you know?
Oh man, ask my wife. I mean, I cry at all kinds of things that she wouldn't expect me to cry about.
Yeah.
But, you know, like sports.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, you got to be passionate about it. You know, you've been in it for this long.
Yeah.
You know, you got the passion for it. Like, I remember you vividly saying, quote unquote, you know, just describing the night. You're like, I don't know what to say. And honestly, that doesn't happen often.
No, it doesn't. You know? I was speechless. I mean, I'm still getting over it. I mean, it is so amazing to me. Like I would have been happy with a cake, honestly. But the team did so much, from the production crew to the front office, and to have that kind of show of appreciation means so much to me. Because, you know, on a daily basis, you don't have these conversations where they say,
sure.
There aren't a lot of attaboys in this business.
Sure.
You know, you go in, you do your gig, and you go home.
Absolutely.
Right? And so everybody is motivated by something, and very often it's the accolades of your family, your coworkers, and that came on that night. But the other thing is, I think it's unique to this kind of a job, and maybe people who are singers or musicians, you know, and they go on tour, they can relate to this. But for me, the accolades that came in from the fans.
Oh, yeah.
On social media.
Love
and
you, Phil.
In the elevator and walking around. And when we were there in the booth and people walking up, that is something else. And just this morning, I did a couple of cameos from fans who wanted
me
to
awesome.
Just, you know, talk to them about different things. But they both said, congrats on your 1,000 games. It's just amazing. We love when you do this and all that. And what I do is the most fulfilling when I feel that direct connection with the fans, that I feel like I'm not only informing them about the game, which is my job. Nothing's official until I announce it.
Yes.
That's my job. But if I can inform and entertain and add an extra level of something to the experience for the fans, then that's what's fulfilling for me.
I got to say the same thing, man. As a as a fellow kind of personality in the bowl with you. And, you know, I've obviously looked up to you for a long time, and to be in this position to work with you direct is really cool. So I definitely feel that same sentiment for sure. With that being said, with the memories, let's talk about some other memories for you, right? Like some of the, I mean, there's not many people, especially from, let's just talk about the in bowl personality standpoint between you, me, Ali K. You're the one that's been here clearly longest. You were here for the cup run. I got to hear from you a little bit about that, you know? And just that year, just going back to the 06-07 season, mm-hmm. when did you even start to feel it? You know, was it before the playoffs? Was it just during the run that something special was going to happen that year?
Yeah, it was, you know, we got into the playoffs and we were a low seed when we got into the playoffs. And I'm thinking, okay, we're in the playoffs. We've been in the playoffs before.
Sure.
You know, we went to the final in 03. And if the Ducks and the Devils were still playing, if it was a best of infinity, they'd still be playing today because each team was winning at home.
Yeah.
Right? But in the 06-07 season, it's like, you know, we sneak into the playoffs, we win the first round. Oh, that's great. We're going another round. And I'm going to the kiosk and I'm buying one of those pins for each one of the rounds where they have the two logos on them, right? And I'm sticking those pins on my Ducks employee badge. And they win the next round. I said, hey, this is real. This is starting to get real. And we win the conference and we go to the final against Ottawa, the Senators, right?
And they were like, at that point, they were like just dominating, right? I mean, they were dominating the finals. Like you had to have known, or at least had a good hunch, right? Like that they were going to win it.
Yeah. I mean, by the time we got into the conference final, I was thinking, yeah, this is real. And we got into the Stanley Cup final and man, I mean, they just did what they were supposed to do.
Yeah.
They just dominated.
And
won at home.
Huge. California's first cup.
Yeah.
Like just in game five.
And the crowd.
In a big win too.
You can't imagine if you've never been in that kind of a situation at Honda Center. Imagine the loudest game you've been to and then multiply that by like 10. The crowd was just so, you know, there are some nights where you try to get the crowd to say, you know, let's go Ducks. Let's go Ducks. And they'll go for two or three. And there, you know, there's like a pocket of really loud people.
But
then there's everybody else. They're not really using their diaphragm.
Sure.
Come on, people, make some noise.
Yeah, let's go.
Come on, let's get into
come
it.
Come on.
But in the playoffs and in 07, it's like
everybody
left their voice in the building when they got home. We won. You know, they were just screaming like crazy. I mean, it's thunderous. I don't know what the decibel level is
when
people go that loud, but it's got to be, you know, 100 plus and just spectacular. Just gives you chills. And then I'm right there on the ice and the players are picking up the cup. And I got to say, ladies and gentlemen, the Stanley Cup.
Oh, man,
it comes into the building, onto the ice, you know, the guy with the gloves and it's something else.
Oh, that's awesome. And then for you, I know before we started recording here, a little tidbit about you taking a picture with the cup, coming out with
okay.
You got to talk about that.
All right. So, I brought a camera, what was not even state of the art back then, some cheap digital camera. And, I just brought it with me because I figured, okay, tonight could be the night. And so they win the cup. I start snapping pictures. And then Teemu Selänne picks up the cup, or it's his turn to pick up the cup. So I said, okay, I got to get this shot. And he's kind of close to where I am. He's near the red line. And he picks up the cup. And it's like he shifts from first gear to like fifth. In like a second, he just gets this burst of speed and he lets out this yell and he throws up the cup in the air. And I follow, imagine my camera is pointed at a 45 degree angle to the right.
Yep.
And then I sweep to the left and I snap somewhere between that sweep. I capture him in perfect focus. And the fans and the audience in the background look like they're moving 100 miles per hour.
Wow.
It's just a beautiful shot. And so here's what I did. It took me a while. A long time, because that's 07. I don't remember what year was it that we retired Solani's jersey.
2015? I think it was 2015. I was
2015? Yeah. Okay. So 8 years later, I arrange a meeting with Temu and his wife, and I come to Honda Center and I bring two large prints, you know, like 13 by 21, something like that. They're large prints of that photo. And I unroll one of them and I show it to Temu and he says, "Wow, that's a great shot. I've never seen one like that before." And I say, "Yeah, I'm only making these two prints. I'm never going to sell it. You could do what you want with yours, but I'm just going to keep this one forever and not sell it." And his wife said, "Are you sure? You could get $75,000 for that today." So I thought for a second, I said, "No."
That was in 2015. So imagine what that is, 2024.
Yeah. So I gave Temu a Sharpie and he signed his, at the bottom right corner, 2 of 2. And then he signed mine, 1 of 2.
Love how he signed yours, 1 of 2, by the way. Yeah, of course. Yeah. And so where's that hanging right now?
It's in my studio.
Okay.
Yeah. And nice. You know, where it's going to stay. And, you know, a couple of people have seen it.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I don't know if we want to show anybody else.
But. Hey, I will say, I know Phil needs to rearrange the studio a little bit because he got like a nice framed jersey signed by the team for his 1,000 game, along with this like beautiful, beautiful poster.
That's amazing. Who designed that?
The entertainment crew, man. Like that was, that was special.
There's
man.
Like pictures of a dude that looks like me on there. And an earlier stage of my life.
I don't think Temu's 1 of 2 is going to move. I would probably predict that's probably not moving, right?
No, it's not moving.
No.
But those are going up.
Oh, absolutely.
I mean, the more I get, you know, the big glass, it's going to take away some of the sound buffering in the studio, but I think it's worth it.
Oh, man. Well, okay. So man, that's an amazing story, man. I definitely obviously like a lot of people might have sold that back in the day, I feel like. But way to really keep it just special and sentimental to yourself. And the fact that Temu has his own, that was a great move.
It's one of those things, you know, if I sold it, let's say I got 75 grand for it.
Yeah.
You know, 10, 15 years later, whenever, I'll see, you know, like Christie's auction.
$1.9 million,
you know?
Yeah. Come on. Come on. Okay, so let's talk about some other stuff through the years, man. So two questions for you. First one, just throughout the years, and I give you credit. It's so funny, but during your 1,000th game celebration, you were obviously brought backstage. And Ali Kane and I had to do a lot of the reads that you typically do.
Yeah.
And even just reading through stuff that I'm not exactly used to in the moment, I found myself like having to be like super hyper focused and making sure that, you know, I'm not flubbing that. But for you, like you get, you know, you're seeing new lineups every night. There's new players coming in and out, with regards to who we're playing on a night and, night to night basis. Let's talk through like kind of some of the hardships of being a PA announcer, right? Especially yourself, like, throughout the years, were there like ever any like names that we were like, oh man, like if I got to announce that one, I'm going to struggle through that one or just like any little tidbits like that.
I knew you were going to ask me about names. And you know, it's what's weird is, okay, I'm going to let you in on a little like Phil secret. And this is going to be cringeworthy for my wife. Why don't you talk about that? You know, just be positive about yourself. Okay, it's a self-deprecating moment. some people, they forget dates, right?
Yep.
Brad Pitt, for instance, he's famous for, he's got some kind of thing where he can't remember people's faces. Somebody he knows will walk up to him at a party and he can't remember them based on their face. I have a problem with names. I joke that every 3 or 4 months I have to reintroduce myself to my kids, you know, but the truth is I could be working with somebody for years and then take a summer break and come back 3 months later and forget their name. And so on a nightly basis, I need the lineup and I need the names, and I take the visiting names over to the visiting play-by-play announcers. And I say, "Hey, buddy, can I read these to you? And you stop me when I screw up."
So is that part of your game day routine?
That's part of
my
routine.
Okay.
I do that with every single team, every single night. Even if we play the same team like 3 times in a month,
yep,
I will do the same thing every time. It's part of the routine. And then when they correct me, I'll write it phonetically because it's my goal to pronounce every name as if the player's mom is in the audience.
Of course. Yeah.
And so, you know, a lot of the play-by-play announcers say, gosh, thank you for doing this. I wish every PA announcer did that. And they say, oh, gosh, me too. And they should. And then some of them tell me stories about how the announcers just screw up some of the names. I know when I've screwed up names. There was a name, I can't even remember what it was, but it was last season. And it's a guy who's in the minors now, but he came up one night. He came up on a night here at Honda Center, and yeah. I had to say his name, and it's like 9 syllables.
Oh.
And I think in the 7th syllable, I might have skipped that one yep. or something, and just there was a little hiccup in there. And so, you know, I heard about it because then the other team, PR people probably got a hold of our PR people, then our PR people got a hold
yep.
of got a hold of my boss and my yeah. boss got a hold of me and then it becomes a whole thing. And it's weird. You think after all these years, yeah. Hey guys, it's me, Phil.
Yeah. You know,
it's, I'm human.
Yeah, something's of course.
Gonna happen sooner or later.
Absolutely.
But I honestly hold myself at a higher standard than that. I do not want to make any mistakes.
Yeah.
Ever.
Oh, of course.
Ever. And so one of the hardships of being a PA announcer is working with other people's stuff.
Yeah.
The script is all written by other people.
That's true.
I didn't write yeah, it. Yep. I didn't write it.
Yep.
And so what I do, and I've been doing this for so long now, and I think it's just an acquired thing, is I can look at somebody's script, and rather than read it word for word, I'll just tell you what it says.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yes.
And then it's conversational.
That's a true professional right there.
And the other thing that I do, and this is a little, you know, for those of you who want to grow up to be announcers, talk to one person and everybody hears you. Talk to everybody and nobody listens.
Wow.
And so when you're doing the copy, you know, when I read the copy, they'll say, all Ducks fans in attendance. No.
Yeah.
If you come to this game,
you're here. You're okay. In attendance.
When I say if you come to this game, okay, now that one person is listening.
Yeah.
There's 17,000 one persons out there.
Yeah, exactly.
All their brains are listening by themselves.
You come to this game, yeah.
They're not collectively listening, right?
Yeah.
And the same thing is true when you're on the radio. You're talking to one poor schlub stuck in traffic
yep.
in their car, right? You're not talking to a whole arena full of people. And even if you were, you'd want to talk to just one person. So everybody listens. Hey, I have something new for you. Oh, yeah? Okay, I'll pay attention. If I say, hey, Ducks fans, then they're going to keep talking about, hey, did we close on that mortgage this week? Or whatever, you know,
yeah,
whatever absolutely. They're talking about.
Yeah. Yeah. That was a good one. It's sitting up in the twos right there.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. No, it, you know, it's funny. I meant for the show to be conversational and now it's turned into a class.
Oh,
with Phil.
Yeah.
You know, literally you just say, man, that you drop the mic. Say it one more time, man. What was it? You speak to one person.
Everyone listens.
Everyone listens.
If you talk to everybody. Wait, no. If you speak to one person, everyone listens.
You speak to everyone.
Nobody hears you.
Nobody hears you. Wow. Mic drop right there.
Yeah.
Wow. That's good. But no, I feel you on the scripts and stuff like that. It's funny because, you know, my full-time gig here is the marketing side. We're pumping scripts to you guys all the time. And
yeah.
I do love genuinely how you're able to make that into your own and into a way that everyone listens. You know, it's great, man.
Yeah.
It's
awesome. Just figure out, okay, what's important about this message?
Yeah.
And then I tell them what's important about the message. And if there's something missing, you know, I'll say to Scott, our director, I say, I can't read this. There's not enough clarity. I don't even know what this is about.
Oh my gosh.
Somebody pumped it out in a hurry. There was like, you know, no time to get it done.
Yeah.
We got into the script. And I understand that.
Yep.
I mean, there's a lot of pressure to get things done.
For sure.
And sometimes deadlines are stretched and because, you know, the money or whatever comes in last minute, they got to get this on the show tonight.
And absolutely.
Then the copy is just, you know, kind of, nobody proofreads it and it gets into the script. And
boom.
The first person to read it carefully.
You're the last line of defense.
And I say, oh man, what does this say? So I, you know, if I don't know what it means, I can't help the audience buy into that concept.
I feel that.
Yeah. So that's the only challenge. And look, I'm not calling anybody out on this.
No, of course not. This is the world, y'all.
Who teaches copywriting?
No.
Nobody teaches people how to write a script. Well, they probably do.
They probably do.
Go to like Annenberg at USC or something like that.
we're the ones that have to put it out. So, you know, we got to put it in a way that, again, everyone's gonna listen. So,
but, you know, this is the thing that an announcer does. You know, we criticize the messenger.
Yeah, exactly. Just as much as people criticize us for sometimes how we put it out, right? I'm still baffled at the fact that you doing, you know, at the time Mighty Ducks goal or, you know, whatever, like that was criticized. But nonetheless, on the flip side, you know, what, let's talk through a couple, you know, outside of the cup, which that was amazing to hear kind of your experience through that. Outside of the cup, here with the Ducks, you know, one or two just highlight moments. And I'm going to challenge you another way. You can't say the 1,000 game celebration either, because we talked we talked about that too. So outside of your 1,000th game celebration and as well as the cup, what are a couple, you know, big time moments for you here?
All right, here's a big moment for me. And you're not going to expect this one. Okay. So after we won the cup, my boss, my radio boss, put me on the air at night. And so I looked at my sick days, my personal days, and my vacation days, and they were exactly the same number of weekday games that would have conflicted with my radio gig.
Okay.
And so I put together a calendar for my radio boss, and I said, hey, look, you're going to pay me for these things anyway, so let's do this. You know, I'll do all the Ducks games. I'll forfeit, you know, going places on my vacations. He said, no, you got to pick. I said, oh, really? Okay. Well, the radio gig puts the bacon on the table.
Of course. You know? Yeah.
And so the season had already started. In November, I go to my boss, who was Rod Murray at the time. I sit down in his office and I say, Rod, I don't know how to tell you this. I have to step down. And it was just heart wrenching. And it was before a game started.
Oh, wow.
Is when I told him that. And I did that game, and then we picked a date in November. And then from November of 07, I wasn't the announcer. And then during the offseason, before the 09-10 season, I called back up and talked to Chris Brown, who was the game day. He does what Scott does today, Scott Fosnot. Chris Brown was the guy then. And I called up just on a whim, because now I was doing morning drive on the radio. So my evenings were open.
The evenings were open.
I called up and I said, hey, Chris, is there any chance? And he said, yes.
Oh, yeah. Without even
I didn't finish the sentence.
Man.
He said, yes.
And, oh, absolutely.
And so,
how many games were there, just, like that gap?
Yeah, it's quote unquote, it's about that. It's 70 to 90 games, something like that. So I would have my 1,000, you know, two seasons ago.
Yeah. Wow.
Crazy. So that moment was so exciting. And then when I came back.
But man, what people don't know, because of that morning drive though, man, those mornings after those game nights must have been rough, huh?
Oh, yeah. Because I had to be in at 3:30.
Yeah. Yeah.
To do morning drive news. And I'm writing, you know, a couple of hours worth of news before I go on the air.
Wow.
And just.
Stud.
It was.
Two stud right
it
there.
Was, it was rough. And I was teaching at a couple of colleges.
Yep. I remember that.
And so it's like seven jobs, you know, Jamaican money.
Jamaican money. Let's go. Oh, man.
That's one of the big ones. The other one, collectively, I've seen a lot of blood.
Okay.
On the ice.
Oh yeah.
I saw a linesman step on his hand with his skate, and not, you know, it's one of those things like, you know, you ever do this with a folding chair and you had your hands between the fold and you sat down on the chair and there was no way to like release the pressure on your hand.
Yeah.
Same thing with that linesman with his skate. It was just, oh man, it was like Saturday Night Live, you know, fake blood kind of thing.
That's crazy.
And then the other one was, I don't know if you remember this one, and it was along the boards where I sat to my right. That's when, Tamu Solani, I think it was his skate or it was another player's skate. I forget which one it was, but it just ripped right through his leg.
Oh.
and he was out for a while. I mean, things like that bring it home just how dangerous this sport is.
Absolutely.
And how elegant these players are to not have that kind of thing happen every night.
All the time. Yeah.
I mean, it's just freak accidents happen, you know, and it's just, you know, rarely somebody gets hit in the teeth with a puck. And
sure.
You think about it. You think about a guy like Getzlaff, who seemed to be like a puck magnet for a while. But it's just amazing to me. And those two instances remind me just how amazing these athletes are, that they don't get hurt on a daily basis.
Yeah. I mean, they're the pros, man.
They're out there with sticks and knives.
It's nuts.
Really?
Absolutely nuts. It really does. And for you to have that perspective for so long, when to kind of see it right in front of you, that's crazy.
Yeah. That's warriors.
Yeah.
But they somehow don't destroy each other
on the nights and that. And that makes it even crazier when it does happen, that like things have to really fall in line for some, you know.
Yeah.
And to what you said about, like, you know, I'm surprised that these guys don't get hit by puck, you know, more often, because they're elusive, man. They're dodging out. They're dodging and whatnot. So yeah, that's crazy. I'm sitting here kind of just like baffled, because I'm picturing it from your old spot.
Yeah.
Your old spot, just seeing all that, man. But yeah, you know, you have Phil being in the studio with you. It really is kind of like it's kind of a coming in a circle moment for me. You know, I gotta say, again, I started here in 2010, which was already what for you in 2010?
Oh, I'm already 15 years.
15 years
point.
In, yeah. and I'm about to hit my 15th year next year.
Congrats.
Thank you, man. And
that's a long time.
Oh, it is.
By most standards.
Yeah. And we've literally worked together on a lot of things. And again, I've looked up to you in terms of like a voice and personality here with the Ducks for a long time. And I know we've, you know, back in you know, the days where we were making playoffs a little more often, but between that like kind of 2012 to 2016 realm, we were hosting watch parties together and just events and whatnot. So to have you here on the show truly is an honor, man. And congratulations on 1,000 games. And I really think we celebrated you in the most deserving and perfect way.
Yeah. Well, it's my honor to be here. And the 1,000 game thing, you didn't want me to talk about it, but.
Yeah, no.
I'll tell you. You
know, now that we got past that question, of course, like that's got to be one of the top moments for you, right?
Yeah. It definitely is.
Yeah.
And the reaction from the fans
100%.
Makes it so much better than it could have been if it were in an empty building.
Yeah.
Or at a, you know, in a conference hall somewhere with my peers, you know, that would have been great too. But with the fans was just spectacular, and everybody waving, "Hey, congrats, Phil," and all that sort of thing. That's what means so much. And the Simba moment was
My God. Yes. Okay. Let's talk about that moment real quick. So, you know, I love my relationship in the bowl with Phil. I feel like we all have our roles, right? Between you, me, Ali K, in terms of like voices in the bowl. Like, I'm doing a lot of hype stuff. You hype up the crowd too, obviously. But there was a moment in the script where it said it was supposed to be Phil, and it was the Chalk Kids cam, and it was a Simba cam edition. So obviously we want everyone to like lift their babies in the air. Sometimes, you know, guys are lifting their beers up in the air, right?
Yeah, right.
But
like this is like the Lion King moment.
Exactly. Yeah. And I've never done this before. And I literally, right before the moment, there was a moment with Phil where his family came up and he held his grandson. And it was right before this moment. I knew as a true pro that Phil would have done the moment, even holding his grandson. And I knew, I was like, wait, he's going to grab the mic and then do the bit. And you know, nothing's going to really truly distract him because he's a true pro. But I did something I'd never done before. And I went on to our communication system and I said, "Scott, let me take this from Phil." And they're like, what? And I was like, "Trust me, just have the camera on Phil ready to go. And like, let me be the one to introduce it." And again, as a pro, like Phil didn't take any offense to it by any means, because he knew that we were on the same page. And I was like, "Fans, it's time for the Chalk Kids cam. Lift up those babies." And hey, look, Phil Hewlett with his own grandson, and then you lifted up your baby, the whole crowd goes nuts. It was awesome.
Yeah, man. That was great.
Talk about that, man.
Like, yeah, my grandson Ezra, he's 3 and a half, and he's just a ham bone. And as I'm lifting him, he's doing like the Roadrunner thing with his tongue. Yeah,
so good.
And I, you know, because he'll talk to, he's pretty eloquent for a 3 and a half year old, but he and I have our own language. And sometimes it sounds like this. and I swear that's what he was saying when I was lifting him.
Oh my gosh.
And so that was just a great moment.
I just love how there was moments as elegant as, you know, the on ice presentation, all the way to being hilarious in the mm-hmm. goal the power play call where the ref doesn't drop the puck and you're like, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
And then all the way to something as like sentimental as like having a moment with your grandson.
Yeah. You know what? There's levels of professionalism.
Sure.
And I've never wanted to do this job to where it was like stuffy and, and staid and just, you know, like, buy the book kind of thing. I always want to be like, you know, hey, it's me, Phil, I'm your pal.
Yeah.
Kind of thing.
Totally. Even the way you do like the CPK pizza, you know, like how we're trying to get to the text messages and like, you're literally challenging everyone. Then we get to the 1,000 texts and everyone's celebrating. Cause like, we all feel like we won that pizza together.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's because fun. The way you present that.
I love doing that.
Yeah. Too. It's great, man. I think in general, what I love about the Ducks organization, how we're putting out our show, and which is amazing, by the way. I mean, even with the $5 million upgrades going to this year, the on ice projection, all that stuff. The way we do things is, and that's why it's so cool to kind of hear what you did as a pioneer to the PAs in general, and to how we're doing goal calls. I mean, for me, I feel like I'm probably one of the only DJs that are playing music, but also is a host and voice into the show as well. And I think between like what we're doing and the way you do your calls and stuff, I really do think that we have something truly unique and special here in Anaheim.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a people connection.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. It makes it special. And that's what I take home with me each night. And when we win, it just dawned on me, when we win, I keep my own scorecard.
Yeah.
I have a special scorecard that I designed so that stuff flows the way I announce things.
Right. Yeah.
So I'll read left to right, and that's the way I announce it. But I've got, you know, the logo and the colors and all of that. And it's a nice scorecard. And some of the other PA announcers, hey, do you have a template? And I said, how are you with Photoshop? And I said, never mind.
Yeah.
And so I use that. And when we win, you know, it's got all the details on it. It's got the goals. It's got the shots. It's got the penalties. It's a shootout or whatever happened. It's all in there. The referees' names, the attendance, if we get that, if it's a special night, you know, Star Wars night, all that stuff's in there. And when we win, I'll sign it, and then I'll take that with me outside and on the way to the car, and I'll inevitably look for a family with one kid.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I'll walk up to them. I'll say, hey, mom or dad. I said, here's the scorecard from the public address announcer. And they're always, oh my gosh, thank you. Thank you very much.
That's so cool.
But I can't tell you how many times something really special has happened. Like, oh, we're just visiting from Ireland.
Oh, yeah.
And we've never seen a game before. Or, you know, or it's, oh, this is his first game. And he's probably not going to see another one because we're shipping him off to, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
So many times something like, we're shipping off our kid. But, you know, so many times something special like that happened. And I'd say half of the times I've done it, it's been something like that. And I don't know how I'm directed or drawn to these people, but somehow that happens, and it's just amazing when it does.
That's hockey fate right there.
Yeah.
You know? And we're in a market where it's like, we're you know, we have an awesome fan base, obviously, but we obviously have a lot of people coming in too. And so to create that kind of moment is what creates a fan base, not only here within Orange County or Orange Country, as we would now
Orange
say.
Orange Country.
Orange Country. We're trying to make Orange Country everywhere, you know? And those are the type of moments that create that. So that's awesome. That's really awesome that you do that, man. That's cool.
I love it. I mean, it's that I'm here for the fans. That's why I do it.
That's why we're here. Regardless of what happens on the ice year to year, we're ones that you know, are putting on a show night in, night out, regardless of what's happening out there. And I think that's what's so cool about our jobs.
I need to say, though, that, you know, so many fans on social media, they'll say, you know, Phil's the GOAT, you know, and he's the best announcer in the league. And again, going back to, you know, the 32 of us.
Yeah.
I think the fans of every, in every city probably say that about their public address announcer.
Yeah.
And, you know, if they don't,
behind
they've got it. I mean, they're not here. They're not invested in the Ducks team. And so, you know, the guy in Nashville is great. The guy in Colorado is great. The guy in Washington is great. They're all, you know, I'm leaving guys out, Vegas and Dallas. Yeah. So many of these guys are just wonderful announcers. And so the goal is not to be the GOAT.
Yeah.
The goal is to just be there for the fans and give them the greatest experience.
Boom.
And that's it.
I think that, and that's the way, that's why we're going to end it right there, Phil. Yeah. I mean, that's a beautiful way to
this just, is the end.
This is it, man. I 100% agree with you. In fact, I even had Mikey, the in arena host for the Kings in here a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
And we said we said the same thing. It's like, look, we all want to achieve the same thing for our teams.
Yeah.
And that's honestly what it's all about, you know? And, you know, there is obviously there's going to be a sense of rivalry. And we all want to, you know, be the top of our game. But at the end of the day, you know, we're it's all about, you know, our fans and our building. Right. And so,
yeah.
But I gotta say, I don't know if I were to talk to other DJs and stuff, I remember seeing, the PA announcer from St. Louis was saying, I think he's obviously done a lot more than 1,000 games. He's up there. But for me to witness you getting celebrated, as well as just seeing seeing you do what you do for as long as I've been here, and even before I started working here and was a fan, it truly is a pleasure, man. And to be sitting here with you to just kind of to talk through, I say we got to bring you back at some point. We're not done. This conversation, we barely tapped the surface.
No, you're right.
We haven't
talked about anything, Fred.
Yeah.
We're just getting warmed up.
But
one cup of coffee.
Exactly.
That's all that was.
Exactly. So, hey, man, well, let's bring you back in. But what, like, just to end it off again, man, congratulations on all the success, not only here with the Ducks, but outside of here. And, you know, again, for being in the position that I'm in, I was also in radio as well. So I truly, like, look at your journey and seeing, like, the beautiful family you've formed and all this. It truly, for people that are in this same industry who sometimes at times might feel like, how am I supposed to have a family and be successful in this industry? Like, you emulate that. And just know that that's something I've always kind of looked up to, man. So congratulations.
Thank you
for coming on the show.
Oh, honored.
Let's go, man.
Really?
One last message to the fans.
JoJo's the best.
Nah.
Don't ever think otherwise.
Hey.
JoJo is the best.
My man, Phil Hewitt. Let's go, Ducks. Yeah. Thanks for coming on.
Right.
Spinning It. Episode 6, I believe. And we'll definitely have Phil Hewitt back. We'll see you next time, Phil.
Count on it.
Let's go, Ducks. We out of here. Spinning It. We out. Peace.